Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We are so fortunate to have on a variety of guests way smarter than we are to share their industry expertise, all things healthy versus not healthy. Today is no different. The introduction here, I like a couple things. Proud mom, right?
Proud mom.
Shout out.
Proud wife.
Proud wife.
Proud business leader.
Proud business mom.
We have the CEO and founder of Benefit Bay, Brandi Thompson. Welcome to What the Health Just Happened.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm excited too. Where are you from?
I'm originally Kansas City.
Born and raised.
Born and raised on the Kansas side. Moved over to the Missouri side. That's a big deal in Kansas City, but yeah, I'm on the Missouri side.
Where do you currently live? Kansas City?
Kansas City in the Northland, right by the airport in a town called Platt City.
Where are you sitting right now? What city?
I'm sitting in Platt City. Where's
No, like right now, this moment.
Right now, Jacksonville.
You came in town to hang out with us. That excites me. Right. So we'll talk about ICHRA's Benefit Bay specifically. We love doing this show. Thank you, 212 Benefits.
Shout out. But
you came in town to hang out with us.
I did.
And that's wonderful.
Yes.
So let's start with the ICHRA Benefit Bay stuff. I think second half, I love your story, the culture stuff. What is an ICHRA?
Yeah.
What is an ICHRA? Ick of ICHRA. Let's take the ick out of ICHRA. It's individual coverage health reimbursement arrangement for technical terms, but really means defined contribution, or setting a budget at the employer level that your employees get to use to pick their carrier and healthcare product.
So I'm going to repeat that one more time. The acronym, ICHRA.
ICHRA.
Individual Contribution Health Reimbursement Account.
Yes.
So when organizations offer their staff benefits, we'll say health insurance specifically, there's many ways to do it. ICHRA is rapidly growing in popularity for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. Benefit Bay is, could I call you the administrator for better terms? What is Benefit Bay specifically?
Yes, we're an administrator. We are go-to-market through the broker channel. We are go-to-market through the broker first. So we've set up a SaaS technology tool for the broker to be able to quote an ICHRA for their employer. We also are the BIN admin for the employer. And then we are the fintech solution for moving the funds to the payer and facilitating the payroll deductions.
Trey, do you know what SaaS stands for?
Nope.
Software as a service, SaaS. I'd love to do that.
Yes, software as a service.
So your software as a service, BIN admin, fintech.
Yes.
That's a lot of different boxes.
It's a lot of boxes.
But at the end of the day, you are helping organizations and brokerages mm-hmm. facilitate ICHRAs for businesses.
Yes. We're facilitating so that it is as traditional as group of an experience as it can be when you add choice.
Let's stick. I think Joey's already chomping at the bit. Oh, he's waving me off. Back to the ICHRA thing. So maybe a history on it, why it's growing in relevancy, how you ended up stumbling into this atmosphere.
Yeah. So a little history. It's a regulation that passed during the first Trump administration around ICHRA. Really, for us, we came around in 2021, so a little bit after that regulation passed. That regulation, when it first passed, really didn't take off from a broker perspective. Very few employers were really considering this. It was a little slow. But we were founded in April of 21, founded around brokers are going to need a tool to quote this quickly and to really decide if it's the right solution at the consultative table for their employer clients. And that was our original mission, and we've stayed true to it. Myself, how did I get involved in this?
Which, again, I'm looking at LinkedIn, you always look at, but finance background, HR background. You also have your bachelor's and master's. Where was it from? I wrote that down.
St. Mary's. Yeah.
And now you're in the brokerage insurance space.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't... dream of becoming an entrepreneur or a CEO or being in an insurance industry. It just sort of evolved over time. I had a child at 17. That's part of my story. So I was a teen mom and went to college a non-traditional way, went to a junior college, worked through college, then went to get my bachelor's degree at Emporia State University early on, went back later for a master's degree. But I worked in smaller businesses due to the fact that I had a child. I didn't go to the big four, which most people would do with a finance or accounting background. I worked for those smaller lifestyle companies. What do they always struggle with? They struggle with talent. They struggle with benefits. They struggle with recruiting, with staying on top of whatever's happening out there, competing with the Goliaths. And that taught me all of the different things to land in this seat. I wouldn't have chosen to be a CEO or the risk taker as an accountant in my background. And at the time that I stumbled into Benefit Bay, I was also a single mom because I had experienced a divorce. I had recently been at Limelight Health. It was a software technology solution that started as QuotePad for brokers. So similar, right? So connecting the dots. QuotePad was a quick quoting tool that brokers could bring and automate their quoting. They were doing all the spreadsheets, right, to get this done every year. And then they evolved into ancillary quoting and solving for payers on the larger ancillary side. So Principal, RSLI, Emeritus.
Mutual.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So it got me first exposure into what technology can do for a large company. You don't realize that someone else needs to come in and help them solve something. I still had a big frustration around you have employee populations that are consistently negatively affected by employee benefits decisions each year, even though the employers and the brokers are trying to do what's best for those humans. So we had at that time a pregnant mama, an M&A transaction that happened, and we had to change carriers. She was going to deliver. She had been on Kaiser with us at Limelight Health because we were based in California, and we had been acquired by FINEOS in Ireland, and they had a Georgia team.
Yep.
So they had a completely different product. I was part of the M&A team to bring those benefits, payroll programs, all of the above together, compensation. And although I was doing that project, I was going to hurt people. Right? I was going to, for the right outcome, affect moms, affect families, because we could no longer be on Kaiser as a merged entity. We to get the right outcome for that business, needed to move carriers.
This is, I'm gonna pause for a second. I think Joey has something to add too, but this is, right, painting a picture when you go from a small business or startup, the merger and acquisition space, you have employees in California.
Yeah.
Then there's a pivot to Georgia, and state to state is so different.
It's so different.
When you say hurt people, it's a tough term to use, but it's a reality. These employees or staff in, let's use California, now don't have access to what really they need in that state because it's transferring to Georgia.
Right. Or they had access to Blue Cross Blue Shield California network, or they have access to a different network, or Aetna, let's say, whatever you're going to use. I'm not going to say what we did in that scenario, but what we did in that scenario was move the entire population to one carrier, which is what a lot of people do, so that we could maximize spend, right? And so that you could do what you needed to do for the consolidated population. It was COVID. The organizations were facing financial struggles. People weren't deploying extra. You know, we weren't able to go travel into a new contract and sell that contract. So you're making decisions that you have to make so that people can stay employed. Mm-hmm. But a few people have to change a physician, have the stress during a pregnancy, have to find a new hospital to deliver at, have to do all of these things during
that
same time. What
tier is their prescription medication on?
Yes. Or, you know, where can I go to the pediatrician? And so those stressors would consistently happen. And those were the dots that were connecting, right? I was an accountant.
Yep.
EBITDA would be blown up.
EBITDA.
EBITDA would be blown up by benefits. Employees would be in the office of HR, and HR would be in the office of the CFO, just really in tears over these personal decisions that we would have to make. But we were spending a lot, and we really wanted what was right for our humans. So that's what led me to Benefit Bay. This is where all the passion comes from, all those years of those things.
I love all this. There is a heavy insurance, employee benefit crowd in here, right?
Yes.
And we'll do the personal stuff the second half for sure. But this all goes back to the ICHRA, I-C-H-R-A. I think, like, how do we quickly define that? I have my definition, you had a good one, but why does it work? It's individual choice. Like that same example, those employees in California can make personal elections versus a master planner policy. Just
right. I mean, if we would have had ICHRA at that time, and ICHRA was around at that time, but people weren't selling it to us, right? We had a broker. We really weren't thinking of that as a solution. So we had 500 employees enrolled. And if we would have had that, then the Georgia employees could have picked what mattered to them. And those who wanted Kaiser could have chose Kaiser, and we could have had the right financial outcome. We didn't. So we made a different decision. But what ICHRA does is really allows that employer to set that defined contribution at a plan level. So they can say, I want everyone to have gold coverage, or I want them to have equivalent to what we have now. I just want to give them the choice.
I have this highlighted from our conversations. Lets you choose your health carrier and your employer set a budget.
Yes.
There's more decision making on the employee. That like the employee yep. essentially has more choice. Joe, you know, yeah, just becomes, chime in whenever you want.
It becomes more of a financial decision for the organization instead of saying we're going to choose these two plans.
Cause yeah.
especially as you get into larger entities, you look at the plan designs and it's typically one traditional plan
yeah.
and one high deductible health plan, maybe two traditional plans, but the choices are limited. And when you have a demographic of employees all over the United States, especially when you're looking from, you said, Georgia and California, those are two polar opposite markets
yeah.
of what is needed and available.
Yeah. And I think the diversity of team has just only evolved since COVID, right? Remote work has really unlocked that employers are hiring from anywhere. So then you just add one nuanced person in New York and a person over in Idaho to the California and the Georgia, and you've got a whole nother problem,
yeah.
right?
New York is a whole nother,
you've got
a whole nother bag
world.
Of worms that yes. is completely different than any other state.
Yeah,
we
wasn't the concept of ICHRA, it wasn't called an ICHRA, but when healthcare reform was passed, everybody thought in the industry, this is the way that it was going to go with subsidies and individual market. And I forget what it was, but there was a tax code that was passed that basically said you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I want to say the company was, I think it was Zane Benefits, which is still around.
Yes.
That had this model in 2010, 2011. And overnight with this legislative change, it just stopped it in its tracks.
Yeah. So
remember that?
Yes. So when ACA passed, really a lot of people thought defined contribution was coming.
They thought right. it was going to be like buying a plane ticket on right. Orbitz or Kayak or whatever.
Absolutely. And then Health and Human Services came in and debunked that and said right. it would be double dipping, basically.
Yep.
These are on exchange policies. At the time, it was majority on exchange policies behavior. So these are on exchange. They're subsidized. They can't be pre-tax. So employers were not going to move to this model if the portion that they pay and that their employee pays out of pocket is not going to be pre-tax. That would drive up the cost of healthcare. Fast forward to 2019, when the regulation or the legislation was put into place, it addressed that misnomer to allow off-exchange policies, so policies that weren't accessing subsidies, to be pre-tax, so direct-to-carrier ACA off-exchange products.
So we have CEO and founder of Benefit Bay, Brandy Thompson. I pulled this from the website, Benefit Bay, delivering personalized benefits to the modern workplace. Benefit Bay is the platform partners choose to deliver personalized benefits. We empower individuals to make their own benefit decisions. That's yes. from the website.
Yes.
The more we can mention your business whenever someone happens to catch a clip.
Yes.
But we do have the CEO and founder of Benefit Bay here, who came from Kansas City, sure. who the Jaguars just beat on Monday night. Sorry. Had
yes,
to drop
they
that
did.
In there. So let's talk about the organization.
Mm-hmm.
You have a remote workforce. We talked yes. about this. What do your staff look like? You've got nurses, teachers.
Yep.
What? Talk through that.
Yeah. Heavy clinical background, really stumbled into the clinical and educator background of employees. As a startup, we've been really gritty. We have not had the large VC capital funding.
We've
been in Kansas City.
I'm going to add this too. You are a David amongst Goliaths. Very similar to 212 Benefits, right?
Yeah.
I love that. There's a lot of Goliaths, VC-backed people doing this. You are a David amongst Goliaths, and I love that.
So. Yes, David amongst Goliaths. So 212's going against those large national agencies, right? And all of that spend and money in the market. Benefit Bay is very much the same. We're going against the administrators that are funded to the tune of $100 million, $125 million, $85 million. And we've raised to date $15 million with $5 million of that closing in August.
Would you say that's changed in the last 5 years or even less from a private equity, venture capital, whatever you want to call it, getting into the ICHRA space? Or has it always been that way from the beginning?
Yeah, I would say in the beginning, no one was underwriting ICHRA as an investment. What happened in 23 is that it became the hot thing mm-hmm. to invest in. And very much so, the venture capital industry feels that direct employer is the administrator to bet on. And so you'll see that a lot of the dollars that have gone out in the market have gone to the technologies that are selling the consumer experience direct to employer, cutting out the broker. Benefit Bay was founded on the thesis that the broker has consultative value at the table, and they are the ones who have the knowledge of those employee populations and those employers with those relationships. And they also have the ancillary knowledge and acumen to be delivering the right product for that employer.
You gave an example. So there's so much to cover. Golly, 48 minutes isn't enough sometimes. When we spoke, One, I am shocked, much larger companies. So when you talk about SMBs, how do you define it? Is it enrolled employees? Is it total employees? Is it revenue? I was surprised the size of groups that are looking at this, but you use a specific company, you don't have to name names, in Georgia, that does not want to have a broker involved, and you're trying to make a case why they should have a broker involved.
Yes. So we have this often where the employers are being marketed to direct by other parties. They'll do their diligence and they'll look around and they'll land in BenefitBay's web forms. And we will encourage them from conversation one to bring their broker to the table. We will encourage them what the consultative value is of a broker at the table and where the risks are if they don't have that person there with them. I think employers are facing a lot of budget problems. So they may want to make, and they've maybe heard, hey, you can do this for XYZ price if you don't have the broker at the table. So they're thinking cost cutting.
Yep.
They need to understand where the value is and where their risks are, and that ICHRA may be a fit for their population for the next 2 to 3 years. And maybe after that, there's something else that's new at the table. You don't need the person who's contracted with you only aligned on the one solution if there could be alternatives. You need someone at the table who's looking at your population objectively and understanding everything there is that could deliver the right outcome for your employees, and that is continuing to be your advocate in those conversations.
Shameless plug. I know a brokerage firm called 212 Benefits and a couple ladies and men that work there. So you would make a case why it's valuable to have that advocate on your behalf. Some companies would not, because again, I understand you're looking at levers to pull to save costs. But there is a case to be made why having someone in your corner helping with this due diligence is the way to go.
Absolutely. Because if I'm motivated to cut the broker out of the table, I'm going to say, you don't need a broker. They can't do these things. Here are the reasons why I can do this great. I think those that are saying that can't be held accountable by a broker either. Because when the broker comes to the table, the broker asks these very difficult questions on behalf of their client, does security diligence, does fiduciary diligence, and make sure that those licenses with those carriers are there, that they can service, they understand if there's a downstream party involved, right? They ask the critical questions of how is this going to work? And they're honest with the employer about, it's not going to be cupcakes and rainbows. It is change management. How do we do this well?
I love that perspective. I would almost call it a double-edged sword too. We've seen it many times. If we are talking to an organization, an HR or CFO almost feels threatened in their role because they feel like this person is taking some of my responsibility. It's actually a resource. On the counter side, there are some organizations. We have a specific client. When we started with them, they needed a lot of help. They've now hired people that are very familiar with this world, and they're scaling them up in order to scale us down. I think there are organizations that have someone that understands the complexities of this. They can do it, but there's just as many organizations that don't.
Would you also agree to, for everything that you just said, that why a broker is involved, but one of the things that ICHRAs don't eliminate is the employer's compliance responsibility with COBRA and ACA and ERISA.
5500.
All of those things. 1095.
We're geeking out more than I thought we would.
But all those things still apply. And an employer most likely doesn't have the knowledge to what they may know what those things are, that knows they need to do it, but they don't understand all of the things that go into it. And that's the biggest thing that I take away outside of what you said is why a broker still needs to be involved in it in some regard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are right on. And when you're in the SMB space, so if we go back to sizes of employers, BenefitBay does not focus on the SMB space. That field is very crowded, but also with a thesis of go to market through the broker, the brokers are traditionally going to be at the table at the above 50 life space.
51 plus,
right. And so that I think SMBs absolutely deserve to be serviced, and those are important categories, but we were limited funded. So when you're trying to make a business function, you need to look at, well, it's going to take thousands of those groups to do this well. And it's going to take hundreds of this size group to do this well. And so as a company, we had hired we didn't finish this, but we had hired educators, we had hired nurses, we had hired people who wanted to make an impact in healthcare that were frustrated by various reasons because they would have the passion mm-hmm. and the innate want to, and they would know how to solve the problem on the phone and de-escalate with those at the other end of that phone call. But the SMB space in general doesn't have as much compliance. So you can service that direct to employer without all of those things
yep.
that Joey just mentioned, right? If you're in the larger size, you have to meet very specific compliance,
much stricter
yep. compliance. And these penalties are not forgiving. So we had to build a full end-to-end technology that also serviced well for that employer, but solved those problems for that agent. And we stood there at a partner in the table. And to be able to service well with a broker, an employer, an employee, and a payer that is on your side, then you're showing up. Mm. You have to show up or you lose those parties yeah. at the table. The other thing that we clearly understood when we started and were founded is that payers have a long-term relationship with the agencies and the agents in their communities. Right.
Yeah. My goodness.
If you need to build technology integrations with those payers and you approach the market as if you are going to take the mouth that has brought them their relationships and supported and built their trust with employer groups and negotiated contracts each year, how can you be successful at doing that by just coming in and saying this person no longer has value that's been here for 30 years.
Yep.
I'm going to solve this problem. It's a little short-sighted that you would have all the expertise to do that as a technology solution right out of the gate coming to a new industry as a disruptor.
I love the limited conversations we've had. I even text Joey and Adrian afterwards. I'm like, she's awesome. I can't wait. I should mention, if you're still with us, that was much, much deeper in the benefit space in ICRA world. I think what we need to do first half
switch to fun.
Is casual and stories. If you're still around, I promise the second half, we're gonna have a lot of jokes, some personal stuff that does tie back to Benefit Bay, ICRAs, and your story. But any shout outs before the commercial break? Hi, Mom. Love you.
Yeah. Shout out for me to Emerson.
Emerson.
She's my youngest daughter, and we're shouting up Emerson.
Okay. You said Emerson says you never give her any shout outs. So.
Yes. She says I don't talk about her on my
this
podcast.
Could be her first YouTube viral opportunity.
This is her viral opportunity.
I don't know if we're going viral, by the way, but not on that. Not yet.
Emerson's going viral.
Emerson
yes.
is.
Yes.
So what, remind me again, the kid situation. Your blended family, six kids currently?
I have six girls biologically.
Six,
those are mine.
Six girls.
Six girls.
Good boy.
So now you're into this conversation. Age 12 to 31.
Holy cow. We're definitely talking about
these
this
are mine.
Now. Okay.
Yes. And my husband has a son and a daughter. So we have seven girls and a boy. Better yet, we have four children between the age of 19 and 21. Our car insurance, can we talk about car insurance, is out of this world because they rate them on every vehicle. They just might get in the car.
I'm almost speechless because I have two sons and a daughter. My daughter's the youngest, which, by the way, Joey can talk about this too. He has two daughters. Dads love their daughters.
Yes, girl dads. Awesome. Shout out, girl dads.
Oh, yeah. Maybe do good dad, bad dad. Six daughters. I would be lost. I am lost with one daughter, but
yeah.
Wow. There we go. Second half, we're going to have a lot of that stuff. CEO, founder, Benefit Bay. Oh, man, I keep wanting to say the original name, but I'm not. Brandy Thompson.
I say Brandy Birch. Brandy, I mean, a lot Birch. Of people know me as BB.
BB, I like
BB
that too.
BB of BB.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at that.
But now I'm BT. It's not related. Like, Benefit Bay was actually, so little history, the early defined contribution days, Zach Harris registered Benefit Bay. This is why we had the best name in the business, 2012. That's why it's a registered trademark at this point, right? And so he registered it, and then Health and Human Services came in and crushed his dreams, attempt one at this opportunity. So I get all the luxury of us having this great name, right? And the ability to have all of those protections from the early days of registering our name. So
great first half. We're going to have some fun the second half. That's what the hell just happened. Welcome back to the second half of What the Hell Just Happened. If you're catching us here on the radio and you missed your first half, good news is you can catch the full episode on your favorite podcast or YouTube under What the Hell Just Happened. Oh my goodness, we went in the deep end on ICRAs. We have CEO and founder of Benefit Bay here.
I'm going to read. I like reading from the website because it helps. ICHRA's made easy. Benefit Bay gives employees the purchasing power to buy the best benefits to meet their own specific needs. We're zeroed in on the key features of ICHRA and built a platform focused on simplicity, compliance, smooth deployment, savings, and support.
Yeah.
That was a mouthful.
It's a mouthful.
But it's on the website.
Yes, it's on the website.
We went heavy on ICHRA's benefit base specifically. A lot of fun stuff behind the names there. The second half, we're going to see what happens. Maybe have a little more fun. Healthy or not healthy? You remember the game?
I remember the game.
Healthy or not healthy, living in a city that covers two states?
Healthy.
Yeah, it's confusing. Healthy or not healthy, six daughters?
Healthy.
Okay.
Yep.
Healthy or not healthy, starting and founding a business?
Unhealthy.
Not healthy?
Not healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, health insurance?
Ooh, it's not healthy currently.
That's tough.
It's a tough answer, but...
There's really no right or wrong answers, by the way.
Yeah.
Healthy or not healthy, Monday Night Football, Chiefs versus Jags?
Ooh, unhealthy this year.
I'm
but
sorry.
A healthy, fun game.
It was a good one. Healthy or not healthy, being a teen mom?
Ooh, unhealthy, but yielded a lot of growth early.
Are you comfortable talking about that?
I'm okay with talking about it, yeah.
Right, so teen moms, God bless you all. I'm guessing a very close relationship with that daughter.
Yes. Megan is 31, Dr. Meg.
Dr. Meg?
Yeah, Dr. Meg.
Shout out
to OBGYN.
You did tell me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about the parenthood and how you balance. There's no such thing as balance. What was the term you used?
Work-life integration.
I love that.
Yes, work-life integration started for me at 17. So obviously I had a baby my senior year of high school, Dr. Meg. It was the hard way to do it. I would say it's unhealthy for somebody if you don't have a support system. For me, I had my parents. I stayed at home for the first 12 months of her life. And then we moved out on our little selves in a little two-bedroom apartment and went to junior college and did everything. I would say the harder way, I just think it yielded growth early.
Big time.
Yeah.
And you, right, so now you're entrepreneur, Dr. Meg. I love saying that. That's a fun name.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Remind me again the variety of ages between you and your husband, because it was crazy the first half.
31 to age 12, with our combined kids having four kids in the ages of 19 to 21.
You said healthy or not healthy, car insurance.
Not healthy when you have four kids, 19 to 21.
That's a big bill.
That's a big bill.
Oh my gosh. Are you...
Next startup...
What's
car insurance?
Car insurance.
Just kidding.
Let me tell you what. If when I leave insurance, I'm leaving insurance.
Yeah.
So the integration part, I love that term. Everyone talks about work-life balance.
Yeah.
I don't like that term. If you're working, we said this, 60, 78 hours a week, it's going to affect your family life.
Right.
If you're going to every field trip, every sports game, like it's going to affect your work in some capacity. The integration. What a great wordplay there.
Yeah. I mean, integration for me is really important because I've always been an accountant, and you had high seasons, right? Insurance has high seasons.
Yep.
So there's no balance in high season. If you're going to deliver for your customers, your family is going to give. But if your family knows that that's the time when mom or dad are really busy because that's the time that they earn their income throughout the other parts of the year, then that's something the family can work through. But the balance is, when you go back to the balance term, is making sure that you are giving back in those slower seasons for your business or in your job. So just integrating those things and making sure that you're clear and communicate to the parties that you care about in the
yeah.
different windows, right? If we need to take summer time off and we're away from our employers and our brokers, then they need to know that we're going to be gone for that week or that 2 week period. So it's integration and getting there when you can, but also understanding that you can't be everywhere.
We do a game, so healthy or not healthy, I don't know when that started and how it stuck, but we do another one we call good dad, bad dad, where
yeah.
we throw out random stuff, but I like good mom, bad mom. I would yeah. say you're a good mom.
Yeah.
So like good dad, bad dad, rubbing dirt on your kid's wound.
Good dad.
Good dad. I think it's a good dad.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm kidding. That's an example. I want to compliment
you. I love it because at some point there's interpretation to everything, so... I think some people would say you're a bad mom if you work. Some people would
yep.
say, I've heard the statement, why are you going to have six children and pay someone else to raise them?
Mm.
Okay. So it's quality over quantity for me.
Yeah.
Right. Make sure that time that you are present is very quality time, and them seeing me pursue my dreams and do things, you know, that are hard is also something that I give them that maybe a stay-at-home mom doesn't. And so why are we at competition? We're all raising our children. We're doing what's best for them.
Do hard things.
Not all of us have the luxury of being able to have a provider, and we may face adversity, right?
You said something too, I like to say this, the only person that I'm competing with is myself.
Absolutely.
Not everyone feels this way. Like, everything turns into a competition in some capacity.
I was going to say, it's hard to not look at others and be like, damn, whoops.
Yeah. I mean, it happens where I look, I'm like, man, that looks like they're doing a better job than I am or whatever it is. But you're only competing with yourself. That's my opinion.
I think most people don't have imposter syndrome till later. But when I was a mom at 17, I had imposter syndrome at 17. Like, I don't know how to be a mom. People are judging me. I don't know if I'm doing this right. Unfortunately, Megan probably has the result of this. She's very type A because I was very type A. I wanted to do everything right. Her hair had to be perfect. Her clothes had to be perfect. Our home had to be perfect because I was imposing judgment on myself because I was competing with the mom who had it together as a young person. And I think a lot of people don't face that imposter syndrome until they're married and they're doing the Joneses thing.
Yep, totally.
I had it early, and I cut my hair off in my early 20s into a bob so I could look 40 at work, and, you know, I just did crazy things, and when I look back, I'm like...
But that's, I would say that's healthy. The type A personality thing, so people are like, oh, that's bad. Is it? I don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's only bad if you're never giving yourself grace for screwing up. None of us are perfect.
True.
This is, I guess, probably for all three of us in this room. You're a solopreneur, right? You're a father of four now.
Yep.
Golly. Cool. Entrepreneur, business leader. Do you turn it off? Is it always on? Like, you're always have to be editing or doing. You could work 23 hours a day.
It always has to be on because I never know what's coming around the corner, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
For me.
I would say it's always on. I've started this Be Present app. I don't know how everyone feels, but you've got so much coming at you.
Shout out to the Be Present app.
Shout out to the Be Present app. It's really helping me be mindful. We pick up our phones. We check LinkedIn. We check Teams. I mean, for us, for Teams. Maybe it's Slack for someone else. We check email, right? So we're constantly slipping out of being present with our family. And because that is quality time that I want to be focused, I want to be cognizant of I've been slipping into an always on mindset. And I used to be able to shut that off at least a certain window of time in the evening and have some boundaries or a certain time on the weekend. And as Benefit Bay has grown, it's been different challenges. It's been great. Like early on, it was you're doing too many jobs because you don't have enough money to hire everyone. You're wearing all the hats. And now it's more... I don't want to miss an opportunity because we're growing. And so a lot of people know my number. My cell phone number's been the same for all these years. And it's published out there and it's in my email signature. And now sometimes I have a hard time of referring those people to the next person on the team. I still want to be the person who owns all of those relationships.
Heavy is the crown.
Heavy is the crown.
Yeah. A couple things too. I try to religiously watch my screen time on my phone. So every Sunday you get a report.
Yeah.
And then when I see that time spent on the phone, where is it wasted? Like I always say this, I despise social media.
Yeah.
I love LinkedIn. Love it.
Yes.
But for
it's kind of turning a little social media.
It is.
Yeah.
But if you use, it's like anything, it's a tool. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
For the show specifically, like we want to distribute content if we can, but what breaks my heart is when one of my kids say, Daddy, stop staring at your phone. And it's like, because it ebbs and flows. And then it's like, you know what? The second I get home, I'm putting this phone in another room and it's kid time. But it's tough to turn it off.
It is tough to turn it off. I hope some of us start to, you know, rein that in. I think it's coming at us from a lot of directions now. I do think maybe I'm hopeful that the younger generations will start to pull off all the posting all of the time and external validation. And additionally, I think for our mental health, we need to be outside. We need to be engaging with our family. We need to be exercising. And staring at those screens is not great for our memory. I don't want to see the social experience in 30 years if there's a lot of us with the downstream implications, right? So back to empowering our own health too.
Well, let's talk about that. That's a great topic. How I think you and I agreed on this. How much responsibility falls on the individual? This apply again applies all to everything.
All of it, right?
I
think it's in a weird way.
Yeah, I think we are accountable for our health. And I think what's happened, if we go to employer benefits, is we sort of could play the victim that we had a high deductible health plan and we couldn't go and do all of our required necessary appointments because they were going to cost a lot of money. If ICHRA allows you to pick the choice that's zero cost to go and get your preventative care, then you're empowered to do that. But outside of that, we're all empowered to put the right things in our body. We're all empowered to, you know, have limits on social media and do everything in moderation. We're all empowered to be accountable for ourselves and to show up for those we care about. So I don't think that anything takes that accountability away. I don't want to diminish that. There are many people who cannot afford to go pay the co-pays and get the preventative care if they're on a high deductible health plan. But there are some things we can do. We don't have to belong to a gym to get a decent workout at our desk or in our home. So there's some things that we let ourselves off the hook for.
The fact that this is even a confrontational conversation baffles me. I say this is like, I don't want to say a tagline, but the number one way to fight rising healthcare costs is to take care of yourself as much as possible. So you need it as little as possible. You talked about gym memberships. Oh, that went off. If my blood pressure is high and I eat like crap, I used to use chewing tobacco.
Yeah.
My blood pressure was high.
It was terrible.
I drank a lot of alcohol.
Your blood pressure was high.
Hello, mirror. Like, if I eat pizza.
It's hereditary, but also all of those lifestyle habits are making it worse.
That's some personal accountability.
Yeah.
The same thing to health insurance and employee benefits. And it's happening, I believe. Employees, right? So the person working at an organization, you have to take some responsibility in making informed decisions, understanding what you have, what it does, and how to make smart decisions. It's not that easy, though. Simple does not equal easy.
Yeah, simple does not equal easy. Similar, I mean.
That's why we hire you to help us make those decisions.
Well, definitely Joey, Danny, Adrian, Dan, everyone else. Maybe not me.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. We used to ask this question often. I like this question. If you look back, let's say 1, 3, 5, 10, 20 years, what is some healthy advice you would have given yourself?
Oh, I would have given myself the stress advice. I landed myself in trying to be type A after the birth of my twins. It's going through like high stress situations, and I was still trying to keep everything perfect. And I had three older girls who were in sports. I had baby infant twins. I was working at a very stressful organization. And I landed in a, I don't know what you call the procedure, but where they go up your groin to see why you have tachycardia. I had tachycardia just walking around at 29 years old. And there is no reason to put your health at risk for external factors that are within your control. So letting some of those things go, you know, knowing that my home is not going to always have everything in its place and every ounce of laundry done and put away, and that being present with my kids was more important than a perfect house should someone come over and maybe judge me, right? And I would go back to that because I didn't cure that until my really early 30s of caring what people thought.
That's young to figure that out. Some people 40s, 50s don't figure that out, maybe ever.
Yeah, some people never figure it out. But the people who care about me and who are my tribe.
Yeah. Which is all that matters.
Is all that matters. Yep. They're going to come over and they're not going to see the dust on the ceiling.
Oh my gosh, there's a pile of laundry on the couch.
Dude, you should see my backyard. It's a war zone. But we have little kids, so whatever.
It's just not worth it.
My wife and we still struggle, but I always say cleaning for the cleaning lady. We had a cleaning lady for a while. It's like, why are we cleaning? The cleaning lady's coming. I get it.
It's picking up so that everything is in its place before they come. Yeah, absolutely.
We do a family vacation every year. We just got back last week. Our house was literally the worst it's ever been, probably. And I'm sorry, babe. I love you. This is not judging you. Both of us.
No.
We came home. The AC was broke. The dishwasher broke. There's laundry everywhere. And we're like, let's give ourselves some grace. Yeah. Live in this. And now, by the way, shout out Steph. It's immaculate because she cleaned the house up. I try to contribute, but it's giving yourself grace.
Yeah.
It'll
There's
be
seasons. Right. It's work-life integration. Yep. If we go back to that, like taking care of your home is work. And if your work life is currently very active, something has to give for you to be present for the people. And usually it's going to be the scrubbing of the shower or, you know, the putting away and organizing the laundry or doing the spring cleaning. It's just, why do we live like, and I'm not saying anyone needs to go and be a complete slob, but I'm saying what, why do we allow that to pile on to everything else we have in our mind that we're thinking about executing on?
I like this question too. Anything else you'd add? Other advice you'd give yourself? Again, any time frame?
You know, just that kids don't come with a rule book. And that every child has a different innate personality and, you know, giving yourself some grace there too, because you've not done it before. And even if you've done it before with one, the next one's different and the next one's different, right? So, and each child gets a different set of parents and a different set of circumstances.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good point.
Had different careers. I've been divorced. I've been married. I've been remarried, right? Those kids who were at different stages had a different economic situation, a different parenting home, a different way that I showed up based on those external factors. So trying to treat everything the same is...
Hashtag good mom.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so pivot a little bit. You look 1, 3, 5, 10 years out. What is a healthy change you would like to see in your industry?
A healthy change I would like to see in our industry is that people stop selling as if any one solution is the perfect match for everyone. Because it's not. Even in what I do, ICRA is based on the set of humans inside that organization, where they geographically sit, so their actual zip code and their age. That's what makes up the quote, okay? What makes up that same quote is if that population is extremely healthy and running very low on their group insurance policy, ICRA is not going to be cost favorable. We don't need to drive up the cost of healthcare. We need to get the right solution for the humans in that population. And so I would like our industry to evolve there. I would like our industry also to really think about the value chain and the problems they're solving. What value are you bringing? What are you solving? Mm.
The term, there are no silver bullets. I love all of that and completely agree with all of that. When someone presents a product to us, this is the best thing in the world. If you don't do this, you're an idiot. If you don't use this self-insured product, this captive, this ICK, whatever it is, this fully insured product, that's when my red flags go up. Mm-hmm. There are no silver bullets. And every single business and individual should be on a case-by-case basis.
Should be on a case-by-case basis.
And it's changing. Like we said, there's a lot more good than bad, but there are still bad players out there. You know who you are, bad players.
But also, are they just like...
Sorry.
They just go and, you know, preach something, we'll say, and then they counter anything else that's solving a problem in an industry that's not exactly what they do. And I would hope that we would graduate to a little higher level of emotional intelligence about how we approach... Mm. our businesses and delivering value.
So what are some unhealthy things, not as a business, that's a whole different dialogue. In the insurance, I could write a book on all the flaws that I think there are in health insurance. Like what's an unhealthy thing in our industry that you're like, this needs to change immediately? You kind of answered that at the same time.
Yeah, I think lack of transparency is one thing that I'm really passionate about. It's core value at InfoBay is transparency. Let's show everyone where the compensation's going. Let's show everyone how the price is underwritten. Let's have real conversations. Let's not push it up against the same window of compression that we've always done here in this industry. I think also let's realign the motivators. So the behavioral motivators need to be realigned so that people need to earn a compensation. No one's arguing that. But let's not every year the payer gets an increase. Well, that doesn't really, if I'm a payer, and my premium automatically goes up every year, that's not really a great motivator, right? And if my commission's paid on the premium going up, then I'm going to be motivated to keep my client in that same program. Ugh. Let's get to more of a model that, you know, employers are smart. Let's let them identify the value that people are bringing to the table and let them see it. And let's hold each other accountable to deliver the value we're selling.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
So in our, like when we, do you know how many companies don't, they literally have no idea how brokers are compensated. That's one of the first questions.
They think they're not paying, or sometimes they'll say, I don't pay my broker. My broker doesn't.
But it's like, explaining, well, how do you think they're getting paid? It's explaining like as clear as day, like one of the first questions he asked, do you know how we make money? Do you know how we are paid? And a lot of times it's no. But the one example you gave, if a company's costs go up to the insurance provider, we should not be getting a promotion. A raise.
Right. Everyone's getting like an automatic promotion.
Our commission should not go up because your rates go up.
Right.
And there's, again, a lot of people are changing that, whether it's a direct consulting fee, but I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the direct consulting fee. I'm a big fan of the payers caring about their members and doing, you know, advisory panels or hearing the noise and the feedback about what it's really like to be on the other end of their healthcare plan. But I'd also like to see our industry care about those who went to medical school, incurred the medical debt, who are providing the care to the humans. We have compressed their reimbursement rates to such a level that
we could have three episodes
that they have to take 15-minute appointments and not care about the human on the other end. Maybe healthcare turns around when we fix that problem, right?
You don't think healthcare organizations should have 50% of their staff as administrators? Just
no. And I think if we solve technology inside the payers, they wouldn't have to charge as much either because their admin lift is high. But at the end of the day, I think we have a healthcare shortage of providers in America.
It's getting worse.
The state of Washington is really, really having a hard time. I don't blame people for not going into
medical school or leaving.
Yeah. Dr. Meg will use her example, or Nurse Maddie. My second oldest is a labor and delivery nurse, right? So labor and delivery during COVID, they had so many patients going to the hospitals that were taking the, you know, COVID eligible patients, and other hospitals weren't. And then, you know, you just had such critical challenges, and then you have a shortage of providers, and the nurses are calling in, and you have unhealthy loads, right? So the problem is people want to be frustrated with hospitals, but hospitals are struggling with those same reimbursement rates to make this equation work. And a nurse gets a raise of 32 cents. I mean, you used to be a nurse. What is the, you get a Daisy awards because you did a great job.
Free pizza.
You get free pizza. Oh. But I went to the pumpkin patch with Emerson and Maddie, and somebody came up to her and said, how do I know you? She said, I know you. And she was like, it's the hospital. She was carrying a 9-week-old baby, and she had this whole connection with my daughter, who is a complete stranger because she delivered her child, right?
Yeah.
So we need to talk about the humans in the equation. What happens in our industry is if we come up with a technology tool that cuts the bill, then we're hammering on the healthcare provider. Then we're hammering on the hospital. Then we're hammering. The entire system has lots of room for impact and improvement. And it's going to take systematic improvements. And it's going to take people being honest about all of the challenges that are out there. And payers actually paying on time and removing all of the burdens.
Oh my gosh, it's been three times. I'm like, we could have a 48-minute conversation on this.
About
probably hour-long conversation.
Yeah.
So Brandy Thompson here. I like saying BB still. Brandy Birch Thompson.
Yes.
BB's good. CEO and founder of Benefit Bay. I'm going to ask you a question. Did you have fun?
I had fun.
Would you come back?
I would come back.
You think she's telling the truth?
You need to go to her.
Yeah, we're going to start traveling to places, too, and do them on site.
Yeah, you're going to come to KC.
I love KC. I had a blast.
I think also, shout out, 212 Benefits has been a client or a customer of Benefit Bay for their clients since 2022. Early ICRA adopter, early agents bringing it to the table.
Wonderful time. You crushed it. Love your story. Love what y'all are doing. That's what the hell just happened!